My name is Quentin Cross, and I am the president and chairman of the Stelly B. Keefe Social Justice Center, located at 755 Columbia Street in Hudson, New York. Our mission is to provide opportunities for black males to become leaders through empowerment, community service, and advocacy. And I'm happy to be here an hour before what Martin Luther King called the most segregated hour in America, 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock church, right?
Yep. And we're approaching the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech. So that is very important to reflect on as we try to bridge the social gap.
That's very interesting. As you were saying that, it just hit me. Yeah, that is, you know, actually, I'm not a churchgoer as such, but I, you know, as a young as a youngster, I did, you know, go. My mom was Catholic, and I went to a Catholic church, and you know, in Brooklyn, it was lily white, you know. And when I married the mother of my children, who's from Trinidad, and I would go in Brooklyn to the Lafayette Avenue Church of God, and you know, in Brooklyn, and you know, I was the only white face there. I stood out anytime I went to any church. So I hear you. That's one of those things that I just like, wow, like, yeah, really. And that says a lot. So what got me to want to have Quentin up here on the show was I've been hearing a lot about the PINS program and the PINS to prison pipeline. And maybe you could tell us a little bit what PINS is and how it started, possibly.
Well, I'm really not an expert on the law per se, but I can say that PINS stands for Persons in Need of Supervision, and it is a state law that deals with what they would define as incorrigible youth. And it's normally, there's a couple of people who could refer, the school being a major player, the family being a major player, and some, the police certain can refer for PINS.
Okay.
It might be a couple more, but for the most part, the school is the major player.
Okay.
In PINS.
Okay, and I believe that this came about in the wake of Columbine, the Columbine shootings.
I believe so.
Like it was a kind of a zero tolerance thing after that. I hadn't really heard of PINS, but I was hearing incidents in the news of things that when I was going to school were just, you know, maybe you got a note home to your parents or you were taken to the dean's office to be spoken to, and now these same type of, I hate to use the word offenses, are now it's handled in a whole different way.
Yeah, the school-to-prison pipeline is what it's called, and it is it's used to describe, you know, a pattern all over the U.S. of pushing students, and especially those disadvantaged who we know would be kids of color out of school and into the criminal justice system. There are those around the nation and in this community who would reject that and say PINS is here to help and that it's not a criminal proceeding, you know. But I would say, then why do they have a lawyer there? And why is it in front of a judge? And why? And those are perception things, but it's still, it could lead to that because once you have that petition and if it's granted, and there are those agencies who say we provide all these preventative service before that happens. But in the event it happens, there are things that can occur. Like if you don't meet those rules that they place for the child, then they could end up being put in out-of-home placement. And it could be for something minute. I know we dealt with a PINS case that the most serious infraction was him not getting a pass to go to the bathroom.
Now, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you, like, what, you know, what are Pins, like, related situations? And so now, in the scenario you're describing, now this is something, yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, you don't get a Paul pass or whatever, bathroom pass, and, like, you know, when that happened, you know, it wasn't a big deal. Now it's, now what, no, okay, so let's say a student is caught in the hall without a pass. Now, like I said, in the pass, in the years ago, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, yeah, it was an infraction, but nothing, there were no kind of serious repercussions from it. What would that happen now? Like, you would just...
Well, what it is, nothing may happen, but the PIMS process is building the case. So that one, and now we're in a computer age, so everything is computerized.
Right.
So let's say you've come to school 15 times late and you skipped a couple classes, and you were insubordinate, as they say, right, by not getting that pass. Well, that could be the case that is made for you to be referred for a PINS.
Okay, now, and the PINS process, is that very similar to being in court, like in the criminal justice system?
Absolutely, it is very similar. You go in front of a family court judge. The student has an attorney, and the county attorney represents basically the referral agency, and then the parents are on their own. And you know, in this community, where last check, about 40% of the adults have no high school diploma, they're there alone.
Right.
So they're coming there to support their kids, but they have no counsel or anything, but right, they're supposed to be there giving guidance. So
that sounds like the many times I've been in court, you know, I had my oldest son had gotten into embroiled in the criminal justice system down in Brooklyn. And that scenario that you're describing, it sounds like they're just preparing children for the eventuality of being arrested and going through court. It's just like, oh, well, that's no big deal, because I've been through a system like this, you know, when I was, you know. Well, how young do they, do people, is this public school?
It could be as young as they say.
Wow. That's, you know, and there's a lot that's been, a lot of programs, not just, you know, these things with children, but like the last couple of administrations going back to, you know, the George W. Bush and continuing in with Obama, where there's things that sound like they're good things for the environment or for people or for children, when in fact it's actually it's a very punitive system. You know, like
the intent is good. The intent of the legislation was to, okay, this kid is having these problems, let's get a plan together,
okay,
and provide wraparound services so that we can assist them.
Right.
But when you have people who don't know the culture of a community, or don't have the capacity to meet people where they are, or empathetic in the situation.
Right.
And when this, in our case in Columbia County, when it's not run through the Department of Social Service, rather the lead agency being probation, it's a different mindset. Right. And I know many people might disagree with me here, but, you know, one of the things that I know the Celebi Key Social Justice Center would like to see is that it's taken out of the hands of a probation department and put in, you know, DSS as the lead agency.
Right.
Because probation, for the most part, deals with people who have criminal offenses.
Right.
So we're asking these same people to put on a separate hat when it comes to dealing with PINS who come in for non-criminal offenses.
Right, yeah. It doesn't seem inappropriate. Like you were saying, the intent was good, but the implementation mm-hmm. is kind of... if it's broad-based and not specific to a community, like you were saying, then I don't think people are going to be judged on, you know, the whole... I mean, like, okay, for example, I mean, if there's a lot of... You know, if schools were had better programs and like there was had more care for the children, there was better lunch programs, school. You know, like there's a lot of problems that are related to just you know, a kid getting up in the morning and not having a proper meal, and you know maybe you know, when I was a kid, I used to I would have a soda and a cookie. Before I left my house, you know, I didn't know any better back then, but, you know, but like my mom wasn't particularly present to help me out, you know, so like I was on my own and, you know, I had some behavioral problems and I acted out a bit. But again, it was a whole different time and culture. And also, you know, I mean, quite honestly, I mean, I'm white and that's a different, there's a whole different.
It's a whole, you know, you gotta, you know, from our standpoint, we can be honest. We can look at the zero tolerance problem. Policies, the right. excessive policy. We can also talk about the resource diversion. Yes, okay, the money that is probably needed to deal with a high risk kid is not there. Right. So we understand those. We can look at the high stakes testing. We can look at all those things as something that you can throw into the soup, so to speak, right. of why this isn't working and why this policy. Exists, but at the end of the day, this policy affects a disproportionate amount of minorities.
Right.
At the end of the day, and something profound was said at our last time to talk with TSL, is that there's either stipulations on the parents, and if the parents don't comply, they can go to jail. Such as if they're going through that process and they put some stipulations on before they get to the actual court process that says this kid's supposed to be in the house, supposed to have one-on-one, and the kid leaves the house and the parent don't tell, you know, the attorney,
right?
Then the parent could go to jail. Whoa. That is crazy.
Wow. That.
And we need to get away from it. And I think people are serious about that conversation. I think right. the institutions are serious about changing it because it's costing money. And right. they're not committing crimes, but you're sending them to places that are breeding grounds to create right. criminals. Let's be honest.
Oh, no, absolutely. And that's and then I have to wonder, okay, looking at this is going, yeah, well, is this just kind of, yeah. And what it, when you say it's pins to prison pipeline, literally
school
it
is prison pipeline.
It just you just going straight, you know, straight through, and there's no escape out of that pipeline.
Well, it'd be interesting in this county, since it's a smaller county, to track, you know, even 10 to 15 years from the time they gave a kid a pins and they, you know, their numbers have been reducing, and I'm grateful for that. The amount of kids who had 15 years ago were on pens, track them to where they are now. Mm. And that'll tell a story. We, you know, that's clear. Have they gone to county jail?
Right.
Have they been to prison? You know, let's track them from that school when they were juveniles and track and see.
Right.
If there's a correlation, and I bet there is.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because it's a lot of these, federal programs that do things like the Clean Air Act, you know, is actually pollutes the air more. Persons in need of supervision makes it sound like, oh, well, we're going to help them out because they've got problems. But it's actually in reality, it's kind of it's a punitive thing. It's almost like it's like you're victimizing the victims.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, and I'll say this, whether people get happy or sad or regardless of how they feel, it's the people who are in these institutions, a lot, not all, who actually deal in pens or serve pens, don't really understand the people.
Right.
They blame the parents. They blame the community. When we bring up the issue, they say it's race baiting. They don't want to get serious about it.
Right.
They don't want to talk about race and poverty. And if you look at the family, how many of those kids have you gotten in a family? Did you have their parent before you had them?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
People are getting wealthy off of poverty around here. They're making a living off of poverty and prisons and anything in between. And we're calling for change.
Yeah. No. And that's one of the things I wanted to, you know, to ask about, because this PIN, it's a federal program that is.
No, this is state.
It's state.
State law.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now. Is there a way, are there steps that can be taken to, I don't know, roll this back or, you know, or?
I don't really see a problem in the law. I see a problem in how you, you know, enact the law,
right,
or what your interpretation is. We called for the school district to review, the school board to review Penn's petitions. We did that because in our conversations with them and meeting them, they said they didn't know what's going on, and they were the biggest referral agent. They were referring kids. The school board, our elected officials at the school, didn't know what was going on. So we don't know.
Okay.
We're not saying, we're not asking you to intervene. We're not asking you to say yes or no. We're just asking you to review them.
Right.
And from that review, it would hold the lower level principals and assistant principals and who counselors or whoever sends those referrals up accountable, because they know somebody is looking at them. You know, if you look, if you send a Pence petition over for somebody whose major infraction was not getting a pass out of everything, you know, and tardiness, then that's a waste of resources, yours and the people in the county who have to pay to have that whole proceeding.
Right.
And something else could have been done. And I feel the same way on in the other levels when it comes to these zero tolerance policies. It's not needed. You know, I understand if it was, well, if it was violent or anything like that, that's a juvenile delinquent. It's a whole different process.
Right, exactly.
They said it.
Right.
So there's no need for it. So we need to get people in the mindset of prevention or of doing some proactive things before we get to that point, and I think some of these systems want to help.
Okay, well, that's good. So, so for example, what is the procedure when, okay, all right, I've been late, I've been tardy, I cut class, whatever, and I'm singled out now. Not singled out, but I'm you know, okay, I become the focus of this process. If I'm a student, okay, what happens from that point?
Well, they say they put all these diversionary programs in place. So basically, they refer you to an agency for services
outside of the school, hasn't it?
Outside of the school.
Okay.
So I guess probation or DSS would refer you to a service provider to help you.
Right.
So one of the biggest problems with that is they can't relate for the most part.
Right.
Many of those people don't look like them, don't understand what's needed, and can't get to the parents. That's the thing that a Stella Bikie Social Justice Center or some others out here can do, because for the most part, if we're talking about disproportionate amount of minorities in these processes, we know the parents.
Right.
And it's nothing to go and have that conversation, because a lot of times these parents are ill-equipped to deal with that process.
And there's a basic mistrust and on both sides, which trust and on one side and maybe fear and apprehension on the other side.
Yes.
You know? And so, yeah, no, that's a very good point. So, I mean, to me, it seems like, okay, money is being spent for this project, you know, to implement this, you know, just from my way of thinking, you know, I don't know what the reality of how, you know, to make these changes, but seems like it would be better served by having it handled in the school, you know, with some kind of counseling, as opposed to just, you know, outsourcing it to, you know, an agency that really isn't equipped to deal with this.
And I think that's what's trying to occur with, you know, all these service providers or agencies coming together and really thinking about, you know, what's going on here. Mm. But there's still resistance, because when you talk about diverting and moving, you talk about, they don't want to say, but I'll say, you talk about jobs.
Jobs,
you
know, and money. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it's, listen, you've been at it for, you know, 50, 60 years and no results, and kids are still being placed, and you had the kids, the parents, and the grandparents, and nothing's changing. They're still going through these systems. They're still having the same issue. Right. It's like generational. It has to stop. Yeah. When, you know, and you're spending millions and millions of dollars. Can't we get serious about this? We don't want anybody else going to prison through this school-to-prison pipe. We don't want anybody else not to have a chance to succeed in this society. God bless you. I think, you know, we want you to work too, but we don't want you to work off the backs of poverty, off destruction, and imprisonment.
Right. And you know in this society, in this culture, and in, you know, we have a situation where there's no jobs, there's no future, and more so, I mean, in the Black community, you know, I mean, the instance of poverty, I mean, it's kind of trickling down. Things are so bad, so, you know, people who not normally affected by, you know, it on a day to day are being affected, but that just means it's even that much worse in the Black community. And to take you know, a situation that is a result of, you know, years of, you know, systemic institutional racism.
Yes, speak on
you
it.
Know, yeah, come on. Let's be real here. I mean,
I know that's right.
You know, I know a lot of white people think Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player ever lived. That doesn't mean that race relations in this in this country has changed much. Yeah. In fact, in some ways, it's gotten worse.
Michael Jordan and Bill Cosby. The
Okay. Hey, see, right. The you know, the most famous people. And hey, oh yeah, you know, but that doesn't change. That's not, you know, those aren't kind of real people. You know what I mean? Saying it's like, and then that same person who white person would think, oh, Michael Jordan is great. Oh, I love Bill Cosby, would lock his doors when driving down. And let's say you were walking by, you know what I mean? Like, so,
they'll,
I mean,
cross
what
the
is
street.
Right? Exactly. So, I mean, that, so things haven't changed. And what has, you know, in some ways it's kind of
gotten worse.
It's
gotten worse because, basically, we should shut up because Barack Obama is the president. You got a Black president, you should shut up. Anybody can make it happen. If he can do it, you can too. And, you know,
right.
I've never even seen Harvard.
Yeah, that's the old. Yeah, no, it's just. So, but, yeah, it was like, yeah, no, yeah. We, you know, was it state Penn State or State Penn? You know, I mean,
yeah.
You know, where do you, where, you know, what's the reality for you?
Well, I want to make this point in the whole thing. We're dealing with, you know, double the amount of unemployment than the national averages. So if it's 7.4% now, we're 14.8%. We're dealing with families who are now apprehensive about where their young men will be in life based on this Trayvon Martin case.
Right.
We're dealing with a community that is reluctant to be engaged and to speak up and speak out for fear of retribution. And nobody wants to even look at that. They say that's an excuse. Well, anybody who knows me knows that I've been all through the court systems. I've been through, you know, I've been elected official. I've been all over the place. So I have a unique perspective, I want to call it, on all these things. And I read a lot on the blogs and on these different boards, and it's all anonymous. And I tell the Social Justice Center all the time at the general meetings, and this is important to note, because the reason I believe, why many of these comments, which are people's opinions, and I respect that, and some of it's craziness, but I understand people's right to free speech. It's the reason why they do it anonymously is because they know who I am, and they know that I will speak up and speak out. I know how to get redress. They would say those things, for the most part, to the people we serve, to their face, because they know they're not capable of doing anything.
Right.
And we need to change that.
No, I agree. And I'm going to take a little break here, play some music, and we're going to come back. You've been listening to the WGXC Sunday Morning Show. I'm your host, Tommy Sharp. In the studio, I've been talking with Quentin Cross, and we've been discussing the Pins to Prison pipeline. And I'm going to take a little music break, and then we're going to come back and continue the conversation.
But I sure would like to cross over your bridge. Said I may not dress in style as the man in your town do, but I sure know how to say I love you. I wanna love you in the morning.
All right, we're back. Little Gregory Isaacs, some Night Nurse, And that last song, just kind of the lyrics kind of like, yeah, I may not dress the way you do. I may not kind of understand your, we're back in the studio with Quentin Cross, and we've been discussing Pins to Prison Pipeline, and that kind of leading us to another topic of conversation that's affecting the community. When we were off mic, when I was playing the music, we were saying, well, what are we going to talk about next? And he says, ALP. So tell us, what's that?
What's the alternate learning program? And now I'm going to switch my hats. I just want people to know a little bit of my history. I'm a graduate of Hudson City School District, class of 2001. If you're out there, holla. I was the vice president of class and president of student council. Which was a magnificent fun, and I got to engage with all different people of different races, and it gave me some unique perspectives on just different cultures and different people in and around Hudson, which is a city school district that has these outlying towns who are a part of it. Right. And sometimes you have to meet people at the middle to understand where they're coming from.
Because Hudson, I mean, it's a very unique situation. I mean, it's designated as it's a city and has an urban area, but it's really a small town in a rural area.
Absolutely. So so it gets a little crazy. And when I saw this bridge program, which is collaboration between Hudson City School District, Catskill, and Berkshire Farms, you know, to me, I thought it was good because we're trying to help that group of kids who need it, who aren't being successful in that learning environment, who are the kids who might eventually lead to a PINS and lead to right. the school to prison pipeline. And they bring about something to try to change that. They put a plan on the table. This is right. how we want to combat some of those things. And I commend the district for that. And I know that there was a lack of communication and a lack of bringing a community together, which I believe all systems should and all governments should try to allow redress from the constituency because this might have not occurred in the way of the backlash. But as I sat there, I was challenged with the, you know, us versus them mentality based right. on Carol Osterink from Gossip of Rivertown Town, and she put, you know, her little story in, and I did post it up on my Facebook for dialogue, because one of the things she said that, you know, I was taken aback from was, she said the fact that at one time an AOP program was located on this part of Warren Street is not an adequate reason to think it's a good fit now. At one time, many of the storefronts on Warren Street were used for low-income housing, and that's certainly not something anyone who cares about the economic viability of Hudson wants to see happen again.
The economic viability of the well-to-do store owners on Warren Street is actually how I interpret that.
Absolutely. Why we have a 3-year waiting list for Section 8, a couple-year waiting list for any affordable housing. I care about the economic viability of the city, but I want everybody to partake in that economic viability. And a part of that economic viability is affordable, sustainable housing. And I took a little bit more into that is, we don't want y'all on Warren Street. You ain't a part of this economic viability.
Right.
You hinder it. But what they won't put the correlation is the reason why you can build a water treatment plant at your rates, or the reason why you can, go out and bond and build a police station at your rates, the reason why you are eligible for many of the grants that make this city run is because of the poor people. Because if you didn't have the poor people, you wouldn't be in the same level when it comes to government funding. So on our backs that you are where you are, and where you're able to get your water and sewer done at this rate based on this fund that the state has. It's because of the poor people.
Very interesting. And that was something I wasn't aware of until you pointed it out, but that makes so much sense, because one of the biggest industries here is social services. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In terms of employing people and how the money gets spent, how things are done here. So that is a reality.
Absolutely.
But that it's also a continuing situation that just perpetuates and doesn't get any better. Because I call, I see two types of people here. If you want to say the us versus them, you have rich people, a lot of trust funded people. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not making a judgment here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying this is a reality. Okay. And then I call the, DSS, SSI, the poor people's trust fund.
Absolutely. And let's make another point that most people in this county who are on public assistance happen to be Caucasian.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Good point. Because I wasn't. Yes. Mm. Okay.
Let's open that up.
Right. No, exactly. And so it's not a racial thing. It is it's a socioeconomic thing. Exactly. And that whole thing changed. I mean, come here, you have this community that had an economy, one type of economy that was shut down in 1950, kind of driven underground. And then the other, the manufacturing, is gone. Mm-hmm. And nothing to replace it. And just a lot of talk about, oh, well, gee, your waterfront's not being utilized. So why don't we get all those poor people out of those houses on the Hudson Terrace? Because we could build a condo that's not helping anything, I need to go on a little rant here.
Go on.
But, it's like, I call it it's like the missionary syndrome. People come from outside and they know what's better for the people out of here. And this country is founded on, come on, people came, white Europeans came over and just basically said, oh, these people of color, the native indigenous population don't count. We're here and this is ours now. And that mindset has perpetuated into gentrification, because that's what it's evolved or devolved into. So now people come here, and it's not just here, it's all over. But I see it here very clearly. And, they come up here a couple of years, been up here a few years. They got some money and they know what's best for everybody.
And we don't forget that. And Bishop Desmond Tutu said like a really great quote. He said, when the missionaries came to Africa, they had the Bible and we had the land. They said, let us pray we closed our eyes. When we opened them, we had the Bible and they had the land. And it's Amen. The same type of concept
yeah, really.
it's going on here.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, it's like, it's a lot of that. And it's that, and I also call it the big fish in the small pond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can come up here and you figure, I got some money, but, you know, I came from the city or from somewhere else. Everybody got money. They got real money.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody comes up here and goes, oh, well, I'm gonna throw my weight around, you mm-hmm. know? And so those two scenarios are not, you know, it's only, there's only a handful of people that are in that position that want to make, to change things. And they have no idea where they are, who the people are here.
And that's the thing. And that's one of the things that the Celebi Keith Social Justice Center tries to do. As bridge the gap of social distance. I think we first have to talk to each other, not at each other, not move based right. on the issue of the day and being reactive rather than proactive. Coming right. together and having these conversations. Yes, everybody won't be happy. Yes, everybody won't agree. But we open our doors every Thursday at 5:30 for those conversations. And we have these conversations also all over town through Time to Talk, through our different right. panels that we have, because we want people to come together and just to express themselves so that we can make this a better community that everybody can enjoy. Everybody
exactly.
could enjoy. Yes. And Warren Street is for everybody, not just for a certain group of people.
Right. And that's what I see. I see. Okay. Now, as somebody who, you know, let's say I go to the coffee shop or the, you know, there's the spotty dog, and now I have a business. You know, I went partners with somebody on Warren, and it's like the you know, the people from the community that walk by, especially the people of color, like I can feel they don't feel like, you know, they excluded. Like what this mother with a couple of her little daughters were walking by, and I was sitting having a coffee. And the daughter walks in, you know, looks in the coffee shop, goes, that looks cool. Like, you know, like a child, very mm-hmm. like, oh, hey, that looks cool. And the mom who already has that, like, well, that's not a place for us, mm-hmm. kind of go, well, you know, she kind of like almost mm-hmm. discourages her. And I almost say, hey, come in, I'll buy mm-hmm. you a cup of coffee. Or, hey, do you know, something, just like mm-hmm. invite, you know, make it open. Because it's not, there is this divide, and it's a disservice. There's a richness. Mm-hmm. There's a richness in this community that people are, you know, really need to be, you know, more in tune with.
Absolutely.
You know, so, yeah, I guess we're kind of winding down mm-hmm. on this. Quentin, I'd love to have you come up again.
No problem. Thank you for having me. Check out our website, www.stellybekeith.org. Join the movement. We're here.
Yeah, it's starting here. I mean, this is, you know, this is community radio, not just a click, you know, this is, and so I felt, thank you for coming up and starting this, the beginning of this, maybe a dialogue on a broader basis.
Yeah. Also, please tune in the first Wednesday of every month at 2 p.m. the Barbershop Talk.
Ah, which is okay. Okay. That's radio. on this yeah, radio station.
WGXC.
That's right. Wednesday, 2 p.m.
Yep.
Is that every Wednesday?
The first Wednesday.
First Wednesday of every month. Okay, yep. Great. Well, I'll be listening. Again, Quentin, thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Again, I feel, you know, just maybe this could be a start, you know, of something. The little mustard seed, you know,
yes.
You plant that thing and it turns into this monstrous thing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Take care.